Have you ever seen someone do really well and wonder how on earth they managed it? I've found myself asking that very question at times, and now I want to uncover the elements that go into creating success, influence, connection, and most importantly, happiness in people's lives. My friends, welcome to the High Performance Human Podcast.
Welcome one and all to the High Performance Human Podcast. It's your man Andy here. I'm absolutely delighted to have you guys here. And I tell you what, this young lad, well, I say young lad, geez, that makes me sound like a 60-year-old. But I'm telling you now, this human being, he's got energy, he's got drive. But one thing I said in the little chat we had beforehand is he's doing it without being an arsehole, which is a fine balance to try and achieve. And he's doing it with a real aplomb. Sam Gordon is the director at Australian Property Scout. He is a serial investor in the space of real estate, obviously. But I'll tell you what, the drive that this lad's got is undeniable. I'm sure we'll put all of his links and things into the show notes. And I highly encourage you to have a look at this guy, because you can't help but be encouraged by the way that he goes about his business. Sam has been in the property game for over a decade now, comfortably, which belies his years on this planet. But he's putting it to great use, and he's doing it by helping a hell of a lot of other people achieve that target of retiring 500 people by 2030, I think I read somewhere.
That's the one.
Sam, a very, very warm welcome to you. How are things in your world?
Andy, mate, thanks for having us on. Mate, things are good. Things are very good. I'm excited to be on here, mate. And sharing a bit of the story, man, and talking about being a high-performing human, man, which I know you wanted to run through.
Well, it's. I'm really excited about this one, because this, for a lot of the people that are listening, Sam is one of the first ones where we're going to talk a little bit more about the money side of things. And the reason why I was really keen on having Sam come on to the podcast is the fact that, yes, money does drive a lot of the things that he does, but it doesn't come across as if he's obsessed with money. It's more about what the money can help you to achieve. And this is something that I think we really need to talk about in great detail, because as Sam and I were discussing beforehand, with money, you're in one or two camps. You're either demonizing it or you're pissing it away on get-rich-quick schemes in the hope that you're going to be the next Instagram star because you've bought some sort of Doge dog coin of some description, right? So we really need to break this thing down, because I think there's a balance between the two, and I think Sam's going to help us do that. But first off, Sam, for the people that don't know who you are, my friend, please give us a bit of an elevator spiel, a bit of a rundown as to who you are and what got you to this point.
Yeah, mate, for sure. So, mate, I'm the owner and director of Australian Property Scout. We're one of the leading buyers agencies in Australia. Mate, I was lucky enough last month to pick up Buyers Agent of the Year as well, which was really cool, which is through the REB Awards, which is a big real estate business organization that kind of oversees the whole of Australia. So it was cool to pick that one up. So yeah, man, also owner and director of School of Property, which is a property education kind of platform arm that we've kind of built off the side of Australian Property Scout as well. And also the host, mate, of another podcast as well, being the Scouting Australia podcast, where we talk kind of all things property investing, investor stories, mindset stuff as well, similar to what you obviously do. But kind of first and foremost, mate, out of everything, I identify as a property investor, man, a prolific property investor. I've been investing for 15 years on the dot now. So I bought my first one at 19. 34 now. And I love property investing. I love everything to do with property. And that's pretty much what I live, eat, and breathe.
Now, there's a few things I want to unpack with that. But before we do, the question that we ask all of our guests that come onto this show and that I'm privileged to have share the airwaves with me is what this whole definition of a high-performance human is. I've got this belief where we've got four key elements being success, connection, influence, and happiness. But Sam Gordon, give us your MO on what you think defines a high-performance human.
Man, I think it really comes down to anyone that like competes or operates at a very, very high level, right? So the top level in their field, but then also from a health and wealth and fitness sort of side of things as well. In my mind, that really defines someone that's high performing on that front. And then even to round out even the happiness piece, which I think all that sort of comes in to create someone that can perform at an extremely high level for an extended period of time. I think that last point is probably the biggest one. Do it for an extended period of time. It's not something that someone does for a month or even a year or something. A high performing human, and they've learned it, they've built it, and they've become it. And then that's who they stay. That's their, a lot of the time, that's who they are, man. So that's probably my definition of it.
They've learned it, they've built it, they've become it. There you go. There's FYI social team. There is your tagline right there.
There we go.
They've learned it, they've
built it. That was straight off the cuff as well, mate.
Bang, bang. Love it. Seriously, what book did you get that from? The book of your own head. Amazing. That's it. Love it. Now, man, I want to dig into a little bit of your genesis. So you mentioned there, a lot of people say the word love quite flippantly when it comes to what they do, into why they are who they are and what they are and so on and so forth. I get the distinct feeling, though, that it's absolutely genuine with yourself for a number of reasons. First off, the energy that you put out, it can't be faked, this shit, right? It can't be faked.
Yeah, I guess so.
You just can't. But I'm really interested to hear, you said 19 was your first investment property.
Yeah, yeah.
And you've loved it the whole time. What was it at 19 years old that made you or helped you to discover this fire that you've got inside you for this field of work?
Man, I think it goes back well before that, I think it was, because I look back to like my childhood, yeah, and I grew up on a farm a few hours south of Sydney, just a small farm, but I remember watching my parents 7 days a week slog their guts out and just work all the time, nonstop. And man, I remember always looking at them and I would help them on the farm and I just think, man, I do not want to do this until I'm, 50, 60, 70 years of age. And soccer at the time was my thing. I was always chasing soccer sort of thing. But I remember reading about Harry Triguboff, I think when I was about 13, 14, 15, something like that. I was quite young. And I remember reading about Harry Triguboff, and I think he had something like 3,000 apartments at the time. And for those of you who might not know who that is, he's the owner of Meriton, right? And so he builds service departments, and he'd been doing it since he was in his 20s with developing. And I remember reading about him and the size of the portfolio he had. And I always thought, if it doesn't work out in soccer, I'll go and get into property and start property investing, because I knew a lot of people either made their wealth through property or they invested their wealth in property if they made it somewhere else. So that's where I think it always planted the seed in my mind. And then when I was 19, I was working. I'm a high school dropout. I dropped out right at the start of year 11. And because I was, living down south of Sydney, but I was commuting up to Sydney I went to a sports high school in Sydney. It was too much kind of travel and the HSC and all that sort of stuff at the same time. Plus, I was playing semi-professionally at that time. So I decided to give away school and kind of work instead. And I'd work and just train and play. And man, it was over 3 years. I saved myself about $30,000, and I was looking at buying a Toyota Supra, like back in the days, like Fast and Furious days, and all
nice.
That, like
nice.
The Jap obsession. And man, I went to school with, like in Fairfield, right? So there was a very big Asian community there, and so there was a lot of the Japanese cars and stuff around. And man, I was around it a lot, and that was I really wanted one. But my old boy was a mechanic by trade. And so I'd always take him along, and he'd look at these cars for me and go, mate, nah, this is average. This is a piece of shit. This is no good. And so then he eventually, over time, I just got sick of it. And I was like, and then he said to me one day when we're driving home from one of these in car inspections, he goes, mate, why don't you just go buy a house? Why don't you go look at buying a house for yourself? And that was probably the most advice I ever got from my parents around property investing or property in general. But it made me think back about Harry Triguboff. And I remember thinking about people made money in property. And that was when I started looking back into it again, and I started looking into the loan piece, and I wasn't making much money at the time. When I bought my first property, I was making $750 a week pre-tax. So it was literally like next to nothing. But I could get a loan for $250,000. And I went out and bought my first place for $275,000, a little 2-bed, 1-bath unit in Wollongong. And that was the start. And then kind of from there, man, it wasn't long after that. I was actually at the dentist. to really like hone in on how I, like where I really got bitten by the bug of this whole thing. I didn't really know anything beyond just buying a property. And then I remember sitting at a dentist, and at the time there was three property mags that were out back in the day. And one of them was sitting on this thing, and I'd never read one before. And I'm never early. And for some reason I was early at this, for this appointment, and he was running late, and I was sat there 15 minutes and read this magazine. And then when he called me in, I go, mate, can I take this home? And he goes, yeah, it's all good. And then, mate, I took it home, read that thing back to front, went out and bought them all, subscribed to them all. And then I just consumed as much content as I could, because I was a very low income earner, and I just knew that this was going to be my avenue. I was still playing soccer at the time, but the property investing was where I really wanted to kind of hone in on and put my time and effort and energy into that. So yeah, man, that's where it all kind of really was born from.
You've mentioned soccer, and you also mentioned when you were defining a high performance human, the word competitive.
Yes.
How, so obviously you're obviously into sport from a young age and what have you. In terms of your property investment journey and your business journey, yep. You know, Australian Property Scout, which has won awards and has done really, really well, how much of that competitive streak in you drives you to do the things that you need to do?
I would say it's probably my most key quality in how I've gone in life and kind of the level that I've gone to as well. Competitiveness is... yeah, it's for me, it's everything. Yeah, trying to be the best and continually trying to improve and get better and better, both for myself and for the business and for clients, and being the best, man. And we're literally like super, super committed to that. And it's funny, we're 6 years into business now, and mate, we're only getting seen as getting better and better. And the quality just remains such a key component of what we do. And we never really look to change that. And we will never look to change that. And for me, that's almost like a competitive side of we're, even though we're getting bigger, we're still getting better and better and better. Yeah. And yeah, man, it's competitiveness is everything. I think, you know, I look at a lot of people that maybe didn't grow up around sports and they don't have that real, you know, competitive streak in them. And that's all right, because it can come in at a later date sort of thing as well. But I think that's where it really got bred into me was I played competitively when I was younger. I had an older brother, as well, that I was always trying to compete against. And yeah, man, it got bred into me from a very young age. I think it's a huge part of who I am now.
I want to take a little bit of a left-hand turn.
Let's go for it.
What's your opinion on money?
In what way?
Do you have an opinion on money with respect to how you treat it, how you receive it, how important you see it in your life? Because you mentioned there a couple, when you mentioned you were in the car with the old man,
yeah,
and you said that it took you back to reading about Harry Triguboff. And you saw that it was a really good way to make money. Would you say that, I don't know whether it's because you mentioned that you were from a low income household and whatnot, that that scarcity thing might have driven you towards it, but what is your general opinion on money? Because there are lots and lots of people, particularly in this 20 to 40 age gap, where they're either very, very flippant around money because they think it does literally just grow on an Instagram tree, or they are dead set against it because they feel that it goes against what being a good person is about, for whatever reason. What's your thoughts on money?
Money makes the world go round, right? You can't do anything that you really want to do or achieve almost anything you want to do without money. And I wouldn't say, I'm definitely not obsessed with money. I've come from an extremely frugal and scarcity mindset sort of family as well. And that's actually been really good for me. I don't say that in a bad way. I say it in a good way because it made me extremely conscious of money. And when I was a very low income earner, I was very conscious of not frittering away my money and that I needed to save it for these things. And it's actually built a really, it's a funny thing. It's just built a really strong mindset in me still around money. I'm still extremely frugal all the time. Like I wear these shirts, the industry shirts, 2 for $50. That's literally all I wear all the time. And man, I'm completely fine with it. And it's funny because I'm in the factory. I'm in the studio above my garage where I have a Ferrari downstairs, you know? So it's like, there's things that I love and that I will go and invest into like the Ferrari. It's been a goal of mine since I was about 5 years old. But at the same time, it doesn't mean just because I've made money, I need to go and buy Gucci or Versace or all these brand name sort of things. I have massive respect for money. It's one of those things, it can be amazing because of what it can give you, but at the same time, people can become obsessed with it. And then just when they finally come into it, they fritter it away. And I think coming from that real low income household, it's made me respect it in a massive way. And when I make it, I'm very careful not to just throw it away from that side of things as well. So, but ultimately it's one of those things, it does make the world go around. Yeah. Almost all the best experiences in world you achieve and you reach and you know, from a travel perspective and everything as well. Primary residence, like a really nice home, the car side of things too. Yeah. But they're, to me, they're like big ticket sort of things as well. And I think I think looking at someone's daily expenses and daily habits, that's kind of the real key thing around money. And again, looking at, you know, cheap shirts, I've got the same bloody denim shorts I've been wearing for the last 2 years. I've got like two pairs and I wear them just alternate every day. So I don't know. It's just a funny thing, man. Like I think you can be respectful of money and still make a lot of it and not need to just piss it away at the same time.
I think the key line that I really like from what you said there was you respect money. And I think that's probably the thing that we need to compromise to, but we need to make a compromise towards. Yeah. I think there are plenty of self-help coaches or influencers or whatever you want to call them that would say, you know, become obsessed with money, become obsessed with making money, right? Mm. Your Grant Cardones and all those sorts of types, right? And good on them. They're in their lane and, you know, we're not going to knock them necessarily for that. But I think what that vernacular does is create a bit of a dichotomy. It creates a line in the sand between the haves and the have-nots. Mm. And it almost creates an air of belittlement towards people that have not got the money at the time. And then when you combine that with the fast-paced life that society is in now, and how easily the likes of Instagram and whatnot makes it look to make money, I think that instantaneous success or failure when it comes to that side of things can really create a complete lack of respect towards money. And I think, I mean, look, I for one, I spent so much of my life being very much in the opposite against money category, right?
Yeah, right.
Because, you know, I grew up in a scarcity mindset. My mom and dad were conformists. Mm-hmm. They police officers, so they lived their wage and worked their asses off. And Maggie Thatcher put pay to a lot of their hopes and dreams. And as a result of that, it's taken a hell of a long time for me to really become comfortable with money. So money for me makes me nervous a lot of the time, as opposed to having respect for it. But I really like how you articulated that, because I think if we can turn that nervousness into a respect, it means that we don't have to be, you know, like, you know, bloody Scrooge McDuck, bloody rolling in a bowl, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we don't have to fear the damn thing either. Now, in terms of the money side of things, you being 34, you mentioned that you've got a Ferrari in the garage.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people, as soon as they hear that, I can hear it now, a lot of people will be saying car wanker, right? They'll be saying something along those lines, right? Bloody show off and all that sort of jazz. But talk to me about how you perceive those two different sides of the fence, because I think you've got a real nice spot in the middle of them, which is where we need to be. That's the healthy spot.
Yeah.
But let's talk about those that really hate money, because you must come up against, or you must have some commentary pointed at you that comes from that side of the fence, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so, for sure. I think I remember a couple of years ago, there was a news article that got released on me. It was when I hit 31 properties at 31. Mm-hmm. And I remember there was a news article that went up in the Daily Telegraph and Forbes picked it up and news.com, and it was all these places picked it up. And I remember the amount of like hate that came off the back of it. And I just like laughed. And I remember because I left it for a few days, and then I was like, nah, you know, I'm going to write something up just as a response. And I can fire up, but I can also be diplomatic when I need to be diplomatic. And it was kind of the time to be diplomatic and kind of just give my response to all the haters sort of thing. And I remember just saying something like, I came from an extremely low income base. I never made much money. Property was my vehicle to make money in it. I understood it. I learned how to manipulate it in a positive way, right? Like turn something that was people didn't see value in and then create value out of that and be able to make a profit off the back of that. And then build out cash flow. So, you know, I didn't make much money as a POYG income earner. And that was my vehicle to make money. So some people, you know, have professions where they're very good and they make a lot of money out of doing that. I didn't have that. And so this was my vehicle to go down that avenue. And a lot of time people kind of complain about, okay, well, what about the housing crisis? You know, you're taking houses away and realistically we actually create more affordable housing with what we do. We build grannies, we build secondary dwellings and things like that and create additional, okay, it's additional revenue and income streams for us, but it's also additional affordable housing for the market out there as well. And I think it's one of these things, man, like I never let it impact me because it was my vehicle that I needed to do. You know, that there's people out there that do plenty worse things than what I do to make money as well. And realistically, I just look at it as it's what I had to do to make money. I was very good at it. I've only gotten better at it. And yeah, you can't feel sorry for something that you're good at that isn't illegal. You know what I mean? Like it's just, it's something good from that side. And I've always, I live, breathe, love this stuff. You know, other people didn't go out there and save for 3 years to save their first deposit and then go and renovate this thing for, you know, 20 hours a day for 3 weeks sort of thing to then get it ready for rent and things like that. And that's what I did as a low income earner to save money and to stretch my money as far as possible and to minimize my downtime between rentals and whatnot. So I think it's one of these things, like I never let it impact me because they've never been in my shoes. And unless someone's been in my shoes on the other side, I don't let other people's opinions impact what I do and what I have done in my life. Cause we're all where we are because of decisions that we've made, be it good or be it bad or, you know, and things come out in the wash and sometimes things turn out not as good as people went out there and tried to do it. But ultimately we're a product of our own environment that we've worked towards. And yeah, if I double down a little bit on that as well, something you were talking about before that I just wrote down one thing as you were talking after that little piece we said before, this one was kind of around people's money stories, right? And I can't remember what you were saying, something in particular, and money story popped in my mind. We talk about the money story. Like everyone's got a money story, right? Whether it's good or bad and where they've come from with money or whether that has been a lot or not much and that makes them flippant with, you know, frugal with money or not. And I think like so many people are stuck in the mindset that is unchangeable or that's just who they are and how they are. But we're all like made over time. You know what I mean? We're not born in a specific way. And if you want to invest and you want to build wealth and you want to create something or you want to become a really good sales agent, auctioneer, whatever it is that you want to do, you can learn these skills. If you don't want to be as flippant with your money, learn how to become frugal, read up on it, you know, research your stuff and become good at that. And I think like everyone, when people hit me up with stuff like that and have a go at me, I just look at it as victim mentality. You haven't been out there and done what I do, so you can't judge me. You know, and that's the way that I always look at it. Because anyone can change their journey. Anyone can change their story. It's all down to the individual. It's always down to the individual from that side. And yeah, there's plenty of people that have come from a worse position than me and are way further in front of me as well. So I think, and those people I respect because I look at them and I'm like, holy shit, like, you know, come from there and now you're up there. Like, that's amazing, man. Well done. And I think that's a huge issue in Australia is tall poppy of like looking at cutting everyone back down to a lower level. You know, it's one thing that I think we struggle with massively in a country. And I struggled with that actually a lot when I was younger. Again, came from the environment that I grew up in. And one of the biggest things, if you cut other people down or look at other people from that perspective, you need to change that because it's only going to negatively impact your mindset and who you can become. As opposed to if you're positive and you want to see other people win, it will help you win. Like, I promise you that. I remember when I wasn't as positive and upbeat about other people having success, I wasn't as successful. And then when I started really wanting other people to succeed and being happy for other people's success, that's when a lot of things changed, man. So it's a very interesting part of life. I think that people just have to have a deep, solid look at themselves. And if they're throwing stones at other people, you just got to look at your own journey and what you've done to get where you are.
I much to unpack with that one. first off, before I dig into some of the other bits, what does fire you up? Because you mentioned there that you have a propensity to fire up at times.
Yeah.
And a propensity to be diplomatic on occasion. What fires you up? Apart from Liverpool getting beat.
I was literally just about to say where Liverpool get beaten. Man, I think it's people. There's a lot of different things. I think people unnecessarily trying to tear others down, and also people being unrealistic with expectations, things like that. Man, people not doing what they say they're going to do. So the whole reason, give you a little bit of backstory on why I actually became a buyer's agent was, and it's funny now because I look at my journey and where I've come from and how we still build the business now of even when we build to go to a next level of scale to a perspective and go to the next level in our business, we always keep the same moral compass and we always keep that same deal quality that we've always promised people. And I became a buyer's agent because when I was 26, I went and actually engaged a different buyer's agent, a guy that I looked up to and I thought he was a bit of an idol. And in reality, I found out after a lot of his story was bullshit. And man, I had a 7 or 8 property. Guys were very experienced in the industry, looked at my portfolio and they go, mate, you're killing it. Just keep going. Just keep doing your thing. You don't need us. Like, you know, you're sweet. And then I went to this other guy and who I'd kind of see, who was the last guy I wanted to see as like the final checkpoint. And he pretty much just rubbished my portfolio. And I remember, man, like thinking, man, these guys' deals must be amazing. And then I signed on with them and then I just realized like within a day that it was a scam because then they just started smashing you with deals. And that's the biggest thing, you know, when someone says they get, you know, all these discounts and all the rest of stuff, if you're getting deals straight away or they say, yeah, we've got deals available, like there's no way. Discounts don't sit on the shelf. It takes a lot of time, effort, energy, relationships. It takes so much time to kind of get that stuff through. They're not just sitting on the shelf. And I remember when I went through that, and it was about a 6-month process before I finally terminated, but it was a non-refundable it was $9,900 engagement. It was a lot of money. And when I went through that whole process, it made me just have this, that actually talking about firing me up. I remember I was depressed about it for probably about 6 months. Cause I was only at 26. I was probably making 60, 70 grand at the time. And like that's pre-tax and $10,000 post-tax money is a lot of money. And then that lit a proper fire in my belly, of wanting to go, nah, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to go massive with this. You're going to go crazy with the investing. And it was probably in hindsight, the best $10,000 I ever spent because getting burnt by that made me learn everything I could with property and go as hard as I could with property, just go all in on property. And then when I did really well out of it, in 2020, I actually won Investor of the Year and I had replaced enough of my income that I didn't need to work anymore. I'd done that like a year or two before and I'd been traveling and stuff. And then I was just like, I needed to help other people do this. Like if that's where people think the top is, like that is absolute rubbish. And I knew we could go so much better than that. So like when it comes to like people not delivering on their promises or you know, from that side of things, that's what really fires me up from that side. We always try and be very direct with what is achievable and what will help people achieve. And then we go out there. And if we can, obviously we try and over deliver on that side of things as well. So I think it always comes down to like people just not being realistic and not being true to their word. I think that's the biggest thing that probably fires me up more than anything, is that side of things.
I bet you would cop a little bit of, look at this get rich quick sort of caper, right? I would have thought you would cop a little bit of that.
Not too much because like we always portray that like a portfolio, like to create something significant in property, it's not an overnight thing. It's something I always say, it's not overnight. Yeah, if you're thinking we're going to retire you in 12 months, like unless you're coming to us with a couple of mil in the bank and we're just, you know, doing deals in cash, it takes time to build a portfolio. So the only people we get that come through that are occasionally like that are people who actually haven't watched our content or listened to our content because we're very open with the fact that, you know, it could take you, if you want to build $150,000, $200,000 per annum, you know, net income portfolio, it might take 5 to 7 years to build that portfolio and then maybe another, you know, 5 to 7 for that to come to maturity from that side of things. So it could be a 10 to 15 year journey to be at 150, 250,000 plus per annum net passive, but it depends where you're starting on. And again, man, that's why we always just try and be super direct with someone's position when they come in and give them real tangible sort of timelines on what they can do. We don't cop too much. I used to a little bit back in the day, but that was because we were a lot lower volume when it was just me and like the discounts were huge. The market was dead, like especially like COVID times, man. Like some of the discounts back then were crazy. Yeah, people thought that was that they were bullshit, but like, man, that was the market. Like it was crazy in 2019, 2020 was nuts. So
now, man, like going back to some of the stuff that you said before.
Yeah.
And when you were talking about what fired you up and you mentioned about things that, like taking a walk in my shoes and taking a walk in that whole conversation right there.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people, and I'd like to get your take on this, this is a little bit of a side thing. I think a lot of people worry too much about other people's shoes as opposed to really coming to understand where they stand in their own shoes, right?
Yeah.
I've got this, and this is where I'm hoping that you might be able to help some of the people that are having a listen with this, because you obviously identified where you were in life, who you are as a person, and how you want to rock and roll moving forward, right?
Yeah.
And you were fortunate enough to be able to identify that at a relatively young age. Now, whether you consciously knew it at the time, that's another question entirely, but you had something in you that knew that this is the path you wanted to go down and whatnot, and you were very focused on building your own path. A lot of people in society and a lot of people in this sort of 20 to 40 year old bracket, and it sort of ties in with this whole tall poppy thing, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This whole glass ceiling that society places on us. I think for a lot of people, that lack of understanding as to where they are stood within themselves can more often than not lead them to trying too much to try and get into other people's shoes because they're the shoes that they think is going to help them to be successful.
Yeah.
Now, from your side of things, especially with a lot of the people that you meet and a lot of the people that you come across and whatnot in your business and whatnot, and especially with your school of property as well.
Yeah.
As part of that early education phase, how often do you come across people that think they are in one place in their lives, but that's based on what they see and all that sort of shit?
Yeah.
But when reality is, they're in a completely different space.
Yeah.
Do you cop that a lot? Like, how do you help people to identify that?
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Rita, Real Estate Training Australia. Shane and the team genuinely care for the success of all of their students, not only providing them with the qualifications to enter the industry, but the skills in order to thrive. With 24-hour online support, access to one-on-one training sessions, lifetime access to industry mentors and support, as well as free job-ready training programs for anybody that gets their qualifications through their portal. They're a tremendous outfit, and they want to make sure that everybody that comes into the industry stays in the industry. For more information, make sure you head to their website, www.reta.edu.au.
You'd probably say 15 to 20% of people come through with, it's more unrealistic expectations. And not from a bad way. They just think so much more is achievable than is reality, right? So like, I get a lot of people that come through, they come to me with maybe 100,000. They're like, and we chat about their goals and they're like, oh, well, I want to achieve 250,000 net passive in 5 years. And I'm like, whoa, like,
okay.
And I'm like, how much are you making at the moment? Like 100, 150 grand, something like that. They're normally the sort of scenarios. And I'm like, okay, so, and I never say this in a condescending way. What I always do is I paint the picture and I provide the lay of the land with the way that I see it. Hmm. And I'm like, okay, so let's just say, let's call that in the middle. You make 125 grand a year and you want to make 250,000 per annum net passive in the next 5 years. You're talking about 2 years of your annual income condensed into 1 year to come in on autopilot for the rest of your life. And we're starting with that amount. Like, it's just like, it's an unrealistic expectation. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of walked them through the foundationals of what we have to go through to then build the equity, but like to build the asset base, which allows us to build the equity base and then rolling it into say cash flow deals and things like that. There's a strategy and like a realistic process that we can go through to get to this, but it's not 5 years on 125 grand a year with 100 grand deposit. Like, what we really do, and we're fortunate because a lot of people listen to a lot of our content when they come through. So we don't cop too many that come through with the unrealistic expectations, but it would at least be 10 to 20% that do sort of have those kind of lofty goals from what is achievable. And man, it's most people are very receptive to kind of hearing that feedback once you lay it out. And I think the biggest thing where people make mistakes is people go to someone with that and they got 100 or 150 grand. They're like, yeah, man, no worries. We can do that. And they just go buy them two properties and they never hear from them again. They're paid. They're happy. Like the consultant might be paid, happy, and moves on and whatnot. But for us, we always try and paint a very realistic picture on what is possible. And then this is the way that we'll do it. And then we strategize around that. And yeah, man, again, like I think going back to the process or the journey of when I got burnt and going in with my expectations. And then this was the delivery, which was terrible. Man, it was, it's one of those things. Now we try and paint it very early in terms of what that journey is and then how to really scope it out. I think that's where a lot of people fall under is they just have unrealistic expectations for how long true wealth takes to build. It isn't overnight. And that's why we never portray anything like overnight success. And to me, 5 years is overnight success in property. You look at my journey, it's 15 years to kind of get to where I've built. And it takes a solid 5 to 10, 5 years, you can build a good portfolio, but it's got to mature. It's got to have growth. It's got to have yield growth. You've got to debt reduce, all these sorts of things. They all take time in property. It isn't like shares where you can liquidate in a day sort of thing. It takes time to build this thing out properly. But that's why once you build it out properly, and the key word here is properly, that's where it does go on autopilot for life. You know, let's say if you could build that out in a 10, 12, 15 year window, if you're 30, if you're 20, 30, 40, and then you have that for the next 50, 70, 80 years of your life, man, that's a pretty good position to be in, to have something like that. The other thing I love about property, rents almost always go up with or increase beyond CPI, inflation, right? So, you know, if you have a portfolio today that's, because people will say, oh, well, 250 grand portfolio today, it's going to be nothing in 30, 40 years, but it always increases in line with or above, I found in the last 15 years. And when you look at it historically, it always outperforms it from that side of things. So you're going to be in a better position, if anything, in 20, 30 years.
Where did you get your patience from?
My patience. I learned patience through business. So the first probably I'm in my 6th year of business now. I probably didn't properly learn patience until I was, probably 3-4 years into this journey. As a property investor, I had no patience. When people told me, when I was in my 20s, when I was banging on everyone's doors, give me money, like trying to get more lending. And everyone would just say, no, I didn't have the patience. And it was good that I didn't, because if I had patience and been like, oh yeah, I've got to wait for this to grow or my income to grow or whatever, I wouldn't be in the position that I'm in now. So that persistence from that side really helped my journey. Yeah. But my patience, I learned through dealing with a lot of people through business, to be frank, needing patience and not being able to be as cutthroat as I maybe would be in other aspects of life.
Because and this sort of segues us into the other side of the conversation I wanted to talk around high performing humans and money is the inherent nature of life these days, where everybody feels that they can get the Ferrari next week or they can get this by 2025 or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
And you mentioned there how back in the day you had no patience. But you had a determination and a persistence to continue fighting the fight until you got to where you wanted to be, which inherently has a very, very unconscious patience to it anyway, right? Where you just, you want to, right?
Yeah.
But now you've learned this patience thing. And let's face it, mate, you are 34, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You talk like a 50-year-old, which is so good. It's so good. And it's something that a lot of people would really envy in a big, big way. But it must, and this is going to make us sound really old, by the way, gang, for a second, but it must make you, with the knowledge that you have and the awareness that you have, it must make you panic to a degree when you see the number and the amount of noise around making money in a short space of time and you know, do this, and then you will make millions of dollars and you will be having wads of cash just sat on your desk, making you look like Billy Big Balls and all the rest of it, right? Like, I know there's probably a part of you that probably would just laugh at it, but there must be a bit of you that gets a bit worried, because you must have mates and things like that, surely, that have ballsed up with stuff like that, surely.
Mate, I have in my past. So I signed up to a few courses and seminars. It's actually why I brought out School of Property. My property investment education course was because all the other courses that were out there were being taught. And these are the courses that I did back in the day and the courses that are out there today. They're being taught and they're instructed by people that have either have never actually done it or they did it after they made a lot of money out of business. So no, there's so many people that had never done it through actually going through the trials and tribulations of building a portfolio, a significant portfolio on an average Australian income. And man, it like, let's talk about something, another thing that fires me up. But I think, like really kind of diving into that, it's an interesting thing, man, because that's why I kind of brought that course out. And when I kind of reflect and I look at other people and the way they're doing things, actually, if I go into probably one of the biggest lessons I could ever pass on to anyone, it's block all that shit out. Like there is no such thing as a get rich quick. That's why they call them a scheme, get rich quick scheme, because it's a load of shit. You can't get rich quick overnight. Like serious wealth and building generational wealth and literal serious wealth, it takes time. And it's funny because you say that and man, I don't even look at that. Even if it pops up, I wouldn't even take notice of it. It just goes past, you know what I mean? Or like I blocked certain people so I don't even see that sort of stuff. But man, it's something that I block out. One of the biggest lessons I probably could ever pass on to someone is stop watching the news. Stop watching mainstream media. Stop listening to that shit. Stop listening to news on Instagram or that sort of thing. What I found in life is, I can't remember, someone told me, the mentor told me this. It was something like 7-8 years ago. It was ages ago. And I remember hearing this. There was this thing that said, stop listening to the news. Stop watching the news. Because if anything significant enough happens, you're going to find out. Something that you really need to know, you're going to find out. You don't need to watch the news for it. Okay. Something gets bombed. Something blows up. Like the world's ending. You're going to find out, you know what I mean? Like, but you don't need to hear all that shit and have all that shit in your mind every single day, every single night. And I remember because at the time I was working on the farm all the old boys, all the old cockies and that, they would all have the radio going all the time, right? And they'd have all their old stuff on and they'd all hang out for the news at midday. And every hour there was the bulletin, they'd all hang around for the bulletin. And I'm just like, fucking hell, like. And I remember when I heard that thing and I started realizing and paying attention to that, all these things are constantly triggering your mind, right? And the media makes the most money when they are big, like they're all about grabbing headlines and attention grabbing headlines, right? So when the going's good, they're pumping how great it is. And when it's shit, they're smashing everything as to how bad it is. And I think that's why when you block that out, you can just focus on your journey and you can focus on what you can actually control in front of you. And when you focus purely on that, and again, you don't pull other people down. You just look for people that you can pump up and because if you pump someone up, they're going to be more likely to help you as well, right? And offer things on that side. And I think, man, when that becomes a mindset and you block all the other shit out and you realize that, you know, get rich quick and the fast money schemes, it's all a load of shit. When you focus on what you think you can actually make money on, you focus on that and put time into it, whether it's a career or whether it's an investment strategy or whatever it is, that is how you become wealthy over time. And blocking all that stuff out, not taking it in, is how you keep going to those different levels and leveling up.
And I think that's where a lot of people see themselves as failures. They'll mark themselves as failures based on the perceived measuring stick that is out there, right? And I know that you start to see every so often, you'll hear The Rock talking about the $7 he had in his pocket and all this sort of stuff, right? But very rarely, like no one in a position, maybe not necessarily Rob, but anybody that's in a position of prominence, they never actually show a defeat or a loss or a fail. They never actually show one, right?
Yeah.
And nor did they think that they had anything worth saying when they were going through the process of building up and building up, like yourself, like me, like whoever, right?
Yeah.
And I think the challenge that we have here is that what we need to try and help a lot of people to instill in themselves is that just because someone says that they did it in a year or you see this amount of people do it over the course of time, you can't knock yourself if you don't get it done in the same amount of time. Because chances are they're bullshitting and it was done a lot longer than that and it took a lot longer and a lot more effort or some shady deals or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I think that measuring stick of time you've mentioned time so often in this conversation, and I think it's great, because I think that's something that hasn't been mentioned as much on this podcast as what it perhaps should, is that thing of time, it's your time, it's your journey, it's your clock.
Yeah.
And I think what Sam's really, really brilliantly pointing out here is that you can only run to the clock that you're working to. And that's something that we should all take away. That's something that Sam's done, and he is the product of it, of staying focused on what he wants to do and what he wants to achieve. And I think, and that's one of the hardest bits, I think, these days is trying to quieten that white noise down, man. It's so hard. It's so difficult.
Something else as well, mate. Something you got me thinking about so much here as you were kind of saying that, man. Like, I guarantee you, anyone that has gotten to the top, they have failed on a few things on the way up.
Yeah,
you cannot get to the top and not fuck some things up. It's just the journey. Yep. And if you don't, you're never going to get to like a really high level if you don't make some mistakes along the way. And realistically, you're probably not trying hard enough. And you're not going hard enough. Mm. And I think like it's all within reason, right? Like those people who might already have a family and they might already have a primary residence and they've got some debt around that. Like if I'm looking at it from a property, you know, investing perspective, there's things you have to be mindful of. And obviously you don't want to throw it on the table and risk it all. But at the same time, there's not going stupid levels, and then there's also not going too conservative. You're actually not going to get a nicely compounded result because you're still having a good go at this thing. Mm. And I think that the hardest thing that I see, and probably the most common thing I see, is those two ultimate extremes. People wanting to go, oh, I want to retire on $250,000. Let's use that example again. But I just want to buy like a property a year, sort of thing, or maybe a property every 2 years. But I want to get there in the next 5 or 10 or something. It's like it doesn't work. You know what I mean? And you got to put everything into relevant positions. And we're talking about high performing, right? So we're talking about people that are aiming for the top. And if we're talking about aiming for the top, if you're not making mistakes through your journey, you're not trying hard enough. It's as simple as that. You want to be a high performing human, you're gonna make mistakes. You don't learn anywhere near as much from your wins as you learn from your mistakes. You always remember your mistakes. And all those people that are right at the top, they don't portray it. I guarantee you right now, they would have a huge list of mistakes that I've made through the journey. I look back on my business. I look back on my property investing. There are so many mistakes that I made there along the way, but they made me better. They made me so much better from that front. And if you're trying to be a high performing human, but then you're taking these easy steps and you're taking that easy road, you are not going to become a high performing human. It takes conditioning and it takes time. Exactly as we were kind of saying before, it takes that time, it takes conditioning, it takes pressure from that side of things as well. And pressure comes from pushing hard. And you want to become high performing. Like that's what it takes. You know what I mean? From that side as well. You think about even something like an ice bath, right? We're talking about, you know, from these side of things, an ice bath isn't easy. No one really enjoys an ice bath. You enjoy the benefits of it after, but when you jump in ice, it's fucking freezing, right? It's freezing cold, but it's mad and you get an amazing result. You know, business, investing, saving. No one likes saving. People do it because they might be good at it and it gets to a purpose, but it's there for a purpose. Mm. You know? And I think like, this is people just need to go, man, I actually like the more we talk about this, I actually love this concept of your podcast because, man, like it's a massive paradigm shift people have to go into. If they're sitting in one corner, one category, and they want to go to another, you can change it, but you've got to go through the hard yards of life to change that. And you've got to push yourself and go to that next level. And then you can get there. Anyone can do it. I look at a lot of the younger, both buyers agents and clients that I work with. And sometimes like they've got big goals and I know I have to push them and they want me to push them. And sometimes they don't like how hard I push them, but they love the result they get at the back end. And then they thank me for it at the back end of it as well, because I pushed them to a level that I knew either as investors, I could take them and they'd be safe from it. But even as buyer's agents, I knew if I pushed them to that point, they would get to that level. And I think that's where that's super powerful to when you kind of understand that and you realize that and it really clicks that is what can happen. That's how you become a high-performing human, by continually pushing and pressuring yourself.
Now, I love that. That's going to be an awesome highlight, by the way. Now, one thing that I know I can hear from my audience right now is it's all well and good for you to say this, Sam, but there's always a but. But I am, like you said, like you mentioned before, I've got a kid,
Yep.
I have got a house. Mm-hmm. I have got debt. You're telling me that I'm not working hard enough? Well, fuck you. I'm fucking working my ass off, working however long, then trying to be a parent.
But are you working smart enough?
Bills.
Are you working smart enough? There's always a rebuttal to everything, man.
So let's dig into that. Into that because I like your early retort, because what I find when we as leaders, and I'm saying that in inverted commas because we're all trying to work it out as well, gang. But it's easy for us to say something along the lines of, are you working smart enough? But then it becomes a very condescending sort of style process, right?
Yep.
And the last thing that a lot of those people want to hear is, what do you mean I'm not working fucking smart enough? Right? Mm-hmm. It's not like I can't go and reverse some of the decisions that I made. It's not like I can go and put a condom on like 7 years ago and whatnot. And nor do I want to because I love my kid.
Yeah.
And so, and I'm doing the best that I think I can do given the parameters that I have fallen into. And this is one of the biggest things when it comes to the High Performing Human podcast is how can we help those people? Because I am with you. I do believe that high performance is accessible to way more people than what they realize.
Yeah.
But how can we help them in a way that just doesn't make them feel about this big?
Yeah. Mate, it's a great point. I feel for those people. Because what I always come back to is I was one of those people. It took me 3 years. Like I made, it was $750 a week. I remember I used to clear $584 a week from that $750 a week of pay. Like $584 a week. I wasn't a high income earner. I was a very low income earner. It took me 3 years to save my first deposit. I'm not saying it's easy. It's the thing as nothing ever that's worth achievable in life is easy. You know, building a portfolio, building a business, even building a skill set, these things, they don't come easily. It all takes time. And I 100% feel for those people that might be in that position. It all comes down to what you do in that position. Because if it took you 3 years to save your first deposit, maybe it takes you 2 years, maybe it takes you 5 years. But in that 5 years, can you become a highly educated investor before you in a knowledge base style of thing? And can you consume so much content that by the time you're finally ready to pull the trigger, you buy an absolute cracking property, you know, and then you make your deposit on the way into that first deal. And then you can recycle that equity back out because you've learned how to do that because you've consumed content for the last 2, 3, 5 years to get yourself into this position where you know when you make that purchase and you make that money on the way into the deal, then now you can strip that back out and buy another one. And all of a sudden you've compounded, all right, maybe your first deal, you scraped your way into $300,000 property, which people will say, oh, they fucking can't be done. Guarantee you can be done. We're still consistently buying deals under $300,000. Pull that equity back out, roll into the next one. Maybe you build a base of $1 million worth of properties that are 300 to 350,000 to get to your first million in property. But the key point is understanding how to do it intelligently. And this is why I'm saying it takes time. Time is the biggest thing here where people underestimate to become a high performing human. You don't become it overnight. I look at the level that I operated at when I was an elite athlete and I used to play soccer at quite a high level. I look at my mindset now compared to where I was back then. I am so much mentally stronger. And you would ask almost anyone that I used to play with back in the day, I wasn't your fancy soccer player. Yeah. I was extremely, I was a box-to-box center mid. I used to run all day. I'd put my body on the line nonstop. Mentally, I was extremely strong from a athletic point of view, but from an intelligence point of view and a mental toughness from that side of things too, man, it's a completely different beast.
Mm.
And if you've got to condition yourself for 3 years, I've got to save $200 a week for the next 3 years. And that is my goal. And that gets me a $30,000 deposit. And then maybe all I can do is use some grants or whatever and get into my first deal. And that's what takes you to get there. But over the 3 years, you learn a huge amount of information. So you can make that intelligent decision. You know how to strip it out. You know how to buy the next one. You build yourself this base and you go and buy things that are positive cash flow and they're taking care of themselves. And they tick all these boxes because that's the same process that I went through when I kind of did it. And then you let time do its thing from a property side of things as well and using leverage and compounding and all the rest of it. Man, anyone can do it from this side of things. And that's where I never say the stuff I said before dismissively because I've been through it as well. And that's why when people say it can be done, it's just like it's the application and it's the time piece. And no one can ever hurt me with that side of things. So it took me 3 years to save my deposit to buy my first one. It took me another 3 years to save my deposit to buy my second one. And then I built that. And then during that process, that's where I learned. And that was like, it was literally like a 5-6 year, I call it like a bachelor's of property that I gave myself because I consumed so much content. And then I realized, and that strategy that I've just explained then, that's what I then started to apply. And then at 24, I bought 2 a year. And then at 25, I bought 2 a year. And then I think when I was 26, I bought like 4 a year. And then it just started compounding and going crazy from there. But in the first like 5 years, I only bought 2 properties. And I was still only a very, very low income earner. And so, man, like I understand where people would come from with that response. But at the same time, as hard as this is, and hopefully I don't offend anyone properly, because if that is your honest, response to that, I think it's a cop out. I honestly think you can, if you actually think about it and you have a look at your income, you look at your expenses, you see what you can save, anyone can do this thing. If I could do it at that money, making that amount, only being able to save a tiny bit that I could save, and it took me 3 years to do it. Anyone can do it. It's just a matter of being willing to put the time and effort in to get to that point. And if that's your journey out of being the example before, single mom, child, low income earner sort of thing, if that's your way out of it, then that's your way out of it. You got to commit to that thing. But man, it's saving, it's sacrifice. It's not easy, man. Like, it's not easy from this side of things, but that's what will condition you and breed you into a different level of human. I guarantee you when you buy that first one, if you buy the right thing and then you can recycle, put it in the next one, you're gonna feel like a machine. Yeah, if you do it properly, you can easily build a quite a significant portfolio from this side of things. And if that's how you make money, that's how you make wealth. And there's plenty of free platforms that you can learn this stuff. The magazines aren't around anymore, but the magazines of the modern day is the podcasts. You know, if people want to learn how to do that, I wasn't going to do a direct plug on this sort of thing. But if you want to learn how to actually do this thing, go jump over to the Scouting Australia podcast. This is literally what we talk. That's our free channel of all this sort of information that we kind of give out from that side as well. There's enough in there. If you were super low income and you wanted to learn over the next 3 years on how to build this thing, that's where you go to learn how to actually do it as well.
You know what I'm hearing out of all of this, gang, and again, it comes back to that word time. If you're in a position, and it doesn't matter whether it's about growing wealth or growing health or whatever the case may be, if you're in a position right now where it is physically impossible for you to achieve what you perceive as high performance, then there's other things that you can do to make the most of your time in order to be ready for when you are physically able to make it happen. That for me is the absolute gold out of what Sam just said then. As long as you are maximizing the time that you have available, and it doesn't necessarily need to be in tangible proof or evidence of progress.
Yeah.
If all you can do is learn and educate and feel and look at work out, how would it look if and when you are ready or whatever the case may be. And you can look at your physical health at this. You ain't going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. But if you can educate yourself with the macros, the micros, the this, the that, the other, then that knowledge is going to create such a greater degree of clarity and then provide a practicality to what you feel is an impossible position. I think that's probably the bit that screws so many people over, is they see the end result far too often and don't realize that there is an educational process that they need to go through in order to make that happen. But if they do go through that process, then shit, what seemed impossible may not seem so impossible all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And I think that's the goal that you just said there, man, is how you spent that 3 years while you were saving, chomping at the bit, busting your ass, claiming you didn't have patience. But that to me is like ultimate patience.
And
educating the shit out of yourself on something that you really deeply wanted to achieve. That for me is what turned you into the guy that you've turned into. Is that bit, is the fact that you made sure you didn't waste the time in between while you were in that sort of getting ready pattern.
Yep.
And that, gang, is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing to get out of this podcast is if you can't do it physically, get it done mentally, because there's nothing stopping you from doing that first.
100%.
I love that. Anyway, man, I've taken so much more of your time. I'll probably cost you a property or two for this little trip.
Nah, man, I've enjoyed this, man. I've enjoyed it.
One final question that we always end on these days, yes, which I am looking forward to asking you,
okay,
is, mate, when it comes to what you perceive as high performance and what you want to achieve as high performance,
yeah,
what's the one thing missing out of your game right now?
Man, I think my one, it's funny because I remember you sent through a couple of questions for me to kind of prep up on just in prep to this thing. And man, I think the one thing I'd probably think of for myself in that respect would be I don't block in enough breaks for myself. And I know from past experience that when I have enough recharge time, I operate at a really, really high level. And then I noticed this in particular at the end of last year, I schooled a property. It took me about 4 months to build that thing. And during that 4 months, I didn't take any time off. Like my weekends were completely full. When I'd finish work, I'd go to the studio and record all the videos and I'd be coming up with the content and all those. There's about 80 videos in this thing, you know, ranging from, you know, 10 to 40 minutes sort of long. And it was a huge process sort of building this thing and putting it all together. And when I got to the end of it, because obviously I was doing everything with the business side of things as well, I was absolutely cooked. And I worked right up until, I always do, I always work right up till Chrissy Eve. And then, man, I was cooked. I was recovering for like a week before I was even operational in the holiday mode, you know? And man, I think for people trying to operate at a really high level, I've realized like many times over the years, I didn't take care of myself during that period. But I've realized how important actually having breaks is. And sometimes that's even just capping workloads during weeks. So we've got, I'm not sure the date you're releasing this, but in two and a half, three weeks, we've got a summit coming, a live summit. We've never done it before. And there's a lot of sort of prep going into that side of things and everything as well. Yeah, man, like I'm looking forward to when that quarter finishes. I got a little break coming in after that. Cause it's just one of those things that I've noticed with myself. I can run myself of like 70, 80 hours sort of plus weeks. And then I'll cook myself on that front. And I know that I'm not performing at my highest level when I kind of do those weeks back to back to back to back. And so kind of like capping myself even from a daily perspective, so I don't cook myself, but then also I try and put breaks in quarterly to kind of really recharge the batteries. Cause it's a funny thing. I think when you're first starting out or when you're an entrepreneur man, hustle is super, super important. And I think if you're very early, you got to be wary of how much you cap yourself, right? I'm at a different level now. But I think when you're very, very early and you're trying to make something of yourself, the hustle is real and you do want to push as hard as you can for as long as you can from that side of things. But I know from the situation and the position that I'm in now, I know that when I don't take those, I'm not operating at my most elite level. And that for me, you know, at this point in the business is probably the most important thing rather than me punching out 80 hour plus weeks. So sure. I think, I think for me that's probably the biggest thing but it's a huge thing. I think for everyone is reflecting on where they are, you know, on what they're doing and what could be better, in their schedules, in their lives, in the things that they're doing as well. And then optimizing. It's continual optimization, you know, self-reflection, continual optimization just to get better and better and better.
Would you say you're addicted to what you do?
Yeah, 100%. I've trained every day for as long as I can remember. I train every day. I do saunas, ice baths almost every day. If I run out of time, I don't do them. But for the most part, I do saunas and ice baths almost every day. I'll get up super early. I'll work first thing and I'll go do that little schedule and I'm back and then I'll work. And I don't know, man. It's, I don't know what I'd do if I stopped. I've worked long enough. I've built up enough that I wouldn't need to work. But I couldn't even think. All right, I go travel for a month. I get bored. You know, like what do you do outside of that? So, I'm definitely addicted to what I do. But I don't know, mate. I think if you love something that you do enough and you're passionate enough about it, and you do get addicted to it. I don't think it's an unhealthy thing. You know, if that makes sense.
No, man. If it lights your fire, why the fuck not?
Yeah.
Why not? And one day you might wake up and it's not lighting your fire anymore. And then exactly. That's when you flick the switch, right?
Definitely, man. Definitely.
Amazing. Hey, look, Sam Gordon, man, I can't thank you enough for the time that you've spent with us. The energy, the passion, the knowledge is just undeniable as to what you do and how you do it and how you go about it. How could it not be when you've got to the position that you've got? And I love hearing the backstory and all being well. My goal out of my conversation with you was to hopefully created a greater degree of relatability towards someone that is at that level that a lot of people look at and feel that they could never get to.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed, we've just lit a little path that might help them get there. But we will make sure, team, that we will put all of the links to the school, to Sam, and all of the rest of it into the show notes. So make damn sure you click on that, follow the guy. Aside from anything else, he's just a good guy to follow. Don't follow the news, follow Sam. Sam, Gordon, mate, thank you so much for your time on the High Performance Human Podcast.
Andy, it's been a pleasure, mate. Thank you very much.
Team, thank you for joining us once again. As always, stay safe, healthy, happy. Have yourselves a wonderful day, and we'll catch you on the next one. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the High Performance Human. Hopefully, we've given you enough value to justify the time that you've given us, and we've got you that much closer to becoming your version of a high performance human. If you want to have any questions answered, then please feel free to shoot me a DM on Instagram at Andy Reid Coaching, or alternatively, shoot me an email, andy@andyreid.com.au. Don't forget to subscribe to this channel. Thank you so much for joining us once again, and I really can't wait to hopefully bring you some more value in the next episode. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy, most importantly, stay happy.